Yeah, Wendy, take as long as you want. Speak about whatever you want. The meeting is yours. And if you want to share back to folks afterwards, thank you. And now I'm going to shut up.
All right, great. Thank you, Mark. Hi, everybody. My name is Wendy, and I am a person in recovery. And it's really great to be here. I'm nervous, so I might stammer a little bit. I'm not really sure why, but I am, so it helps for me to say that. Since I don't know a lot of you, I am newish to the Tusnua meetings, so I'll tell you a little bit about who I am. I come from I come to my the most of the what I have struggled with and have come to the programs, the 12-step programs has been through my recovery with alcoholism and with food, though most of my recovery has been through AA. It was the stronger program when I came in the 80s, so that is what I gravitated towards. Even though what I ended up in rehab for when I was 16 was, and what almost killed me back then was my food, was the food. But I come from a family that is, we breed alcoholics. My father, was an alcoholic. My grandfather was. My mother is. And it kind of goes back in the family tree. But I have to say, I didn't know that my dad was an alcoholic. He didn't drink around me. He made great efforts not to. His father was very violent towards him. And my dad swore to himself when he had kids that he would not be violent. He really didn't mind being a drunk, but he did not want to be violent. So when he started to drink, he would leave. And he just would not come home for a long time. So we just thought dad didn't come home. We didn't know why, but I rarely saw my dad drunk. But he would be gone for long periods of time. And so I knew my family was different. My folks got divorced in 1975 when I was 5 years old. And that was relatively new still in the crew and in the family and in the culture that I grew up in. And I grew up in South Carolina. And I grew up like one of the only kids who had divorced parents. And both my parents were, they were children and they were wild. They were, they did not want to be parents. They knew each other 3 days before they got married and thought it was a good idea to get married. And then they were pregnant with me a month later. If that gives you any indication of the kind of family I grew up in. And they lasted 5 years. So good on them. Had me and my sister. And my dad had a real stable family. My mother did not. My mother's family was full of violent predators. My father's family was full of very structured, disciplined, secretly violent, men. But there was more structure there. So, my grandmother took us in, and I say all of this to let you know that like there was this one side, my mother who was like very she was just wild, the divorce happened and she just disappeared. So the court granted my father custody. My dad found a social worker to marry and raise us. And my dad was very resourceful. And so then he just commenced to drink and disappear and turned us over to the social worker because we probably would have ended up in those in that realm anyway. I am so grateful to my step parents. They were good people. Both of them stabilized my parents, and they are probably why I am as sane as I am. Because my mother and father were they just were not what we would call appropriate parents. I was my dad's confidant. I covered up a lot for him. He would show up and his car would be wrecked and dirty, and he would get me up and in the morning and ask me to wash the car, hand me a little cash. Whatever you found inside the car, you could keep. It was usually cash and underwear, but I didn't want the underwear. And just don't tell your stepmother what you found. And so I learned about secrets. I learned about how to get cash for keeping people's secrets. And I learned about I didn't know at the time, but this was about drinking and keeping secrets and keeping secrets from others. And it made me feel close to my dad. And so at age 11, my dad went to rehab. I was told he was going in for kidney problems. And he came back from rehab and looked at me and he was like, I think you're an alcoholic, so you need to watch out. Like, I see you. You have a bad attitude, so you need to watch out. And I had no idea what he was talking about. He took me to Alateen, took my mom to my stepmother to Al-Anon. And things got real weird around the house. It got real unhappy for a minute, and then my dad relapsed, and everything got to normal, went back to normal. I, as a kid, worked real hard to maintain like a normal life, right? Like I was a good athlete. People always liked me. People always wanted me around. Inside, I felt very abnormal, but because I was strong and did well on teams and somewhat pretty, nobody ever asked any questions. They were just like, get over here, be a leader, kick the soccer ball, let's do this. So I could hide a lot. I started drinking at age 11, and right off the bat, I will say alcohol just made me feel normal. I don't know if it was getting drunk or what, but whatever it was, I just felt normal. Everybody else wanted to get drunk. I just wanted my brain to shut up. My brain has always worked too hard, and food and alcohol always shut my brain off. So, and I loved the feeling of blacking out. So right out of the gate, I had no desire to drink like all the other kids, just wanted to get a buzz. I always wanted that magical space where you woke up and you didn't know what happened the night before. I thought that was normal. And so that started my drinking. And I was a good kid. I managed to stay out of trouble. It's easy to stay out of trouble when you are make good grades and are a good, like I said, a good athlete. And there's older boys that want to go out with you, and their parents will keep you out of trouble if they're rich. We were not rich. I figured out how to work the class angle real well. My dad was also a con artist, and so he taught me how to hang out with the right people to keep me out of trouble. Everything was transactional in life. It really wasn't about like feelings or like being happy, or it was really all about how do you stay out of trouble and how do you keep everything off your back. I came home the last time with straight A's, and my dad looked at me and he was like, if you're making straight A's, you're letting them brainwash you. It was the last time I ever came home with straight A's. He really didn't want the school system or the education system to take over my brain, and so I stopped studying, and I just made C's. And he was like, "That's all you need to make. Don't worry about that. Don't let people tell you what to do." And so I just kind of coasted through school, and things started to get worse at home. My dad was in and out of sobriety. He was not home much. And my sister left to go live with my mom. My brother was born. And just in here, like that, and I won't get much into this, but the eating disorder that what I was doing to my body was really taking a toll on me. So I ended up in the hospital for about 12 weeks. When I was in the hospital, the counselors in there, to their credit, really heard me talk about my relationship with alcohol and how I couldn't wait to get out to start drinking again. And I was 16 at the time. Soon after I got out of the hospital, I started drinking again. And the counselors had suggested to me that I, like they talk about in the big book, that I try some controlled drinking. And I did. I tried to do it exactly the opposite of what they said. I wanted to show them that I could drink like they said, like that I wasn't an alcoholic. I wanted to prove this to them. And I couldn't do it. And it scared me to death. And then I went to an AA meeting like I was told to do, and there were all these old men, and I could relate to the way that they felt about alcohol, and it scared me. And I was because there I was like this kid, and I could relate to how people felt about alcohol, how it made them feel better. And I was like, if is this is my life as a kid, where am I headed? So I picked up a white chip, and that's the only white chip I've had to pick up. And so the bulk of my story is about my life sober. And that's been the hard part of my life is sober. Not that the drinking wasn't hard, and not that I don't understand what it feels like to want to drink, but it isn't anything like what I've heard people talk about in the program. But having to learn to live without drinking. And thank goodness I had these sponsors. This was back in 1987. My sobriety date's May 9th, 1987. And I had these great sponsors that were much older than me. And I kept wanting to turn everything into being about alcoholism. And they were like, that's not because you're an alcoholic. That's because you're a jerk adolescent, or that's because you're a teenager. Stop that. That steps aren't going to help you. You can't change that. Be a kid. And then you can also be, we'll work on the steps there, but like, don't turn everything into alcoholism. And they were really smart in that way. And I really appreciate them letting me be human and an alcoholic. And preparing me to be able to live life, this very complex, rich life of making mistakes, still being a very flawed person, and not having to drink. Because that was the main thing my sponsors back then were about, right? They were like, no matter what, you don't have to drink. You don't have to drink again. And I remember stupid things. I remember like, well, if I go out on a date and my boyfriend has been drinking, am I going to get drunk? And my sponsor looked at me and was like, no, but you might get laid, and like just silly things like that. Like just the responses of like take it easy, take it easy, kid. Like you'd slow down, like not everything is so serious. I remember the first time I bounced a check, and I was like, am I going to get drunk because I bounced a check? And they're like, no, you're not, no, but you're going to have some financial problems. Like you need to not everything is about getting drunk, right? Like some of the stuff is just because you're mismanaging things. And so having to learn to deal with that, there were some problems back in the 80s that the group that I was in told me not to take antidepressants. I was severely depressed. I did try to kill myself at 2 years sober. And I think I talked about this last week, but that my dad came to college where I was, and my dad had been in and out of AA, and my dad sat me down and was like, you got to go see somebody, and you got to get some help, and you got to take medicine. He was like, I don't care what those people in AA are telling you. Like, you fight to it. And if that means drinking, you drink. You can get sober again. But if you kill yourself, or if you permanently disable yourself, there is no second chance. He was like, but you can pick up a white chip. He was like, or you go buy a car, or you go do some other behavior that gets you through this. He was like, but you do not attempt suicide. He was like, and he goes, this is serious, Wendy. And I was like, okay, like I hear you. And nobody had ever put it to me like that before. It took this man who struggled until the day he died. He died with 3 years sober, and then that was in 2010, and he had been going to meetings since 19 84. So his sobriety, even though it was, not continuous, has helped me throughout my life. What I learned and took for such this black and white thing, and I was young, but even still, like what I can hear people get, we get so rigid with the idea of, you gotta believe in God, and you gotta do it this way, and you must attend meetings every. whatever it was, like being sober all these years, every bit of it got blown apart, right? Like, a lot of my work has been working with active drug users and coming to learn that there are different rules for people who in the world and in the United States for people who are of a different class and who are of different skin color, and for men and women who get caught up in the system and the way that people look at them and the way the system treated me, because I was this pretty girl that people really wanted to help. And then watching the way they treated a lot of my clients, and then I would come in and they would treat my clients very differently when they found out that they were with me because I was pretty and articulate. It blew my mind, and they it like but we were both alcoholics and both drug addicts, and anyway, it blew the what I had been taught in sobriety about how we're all brothers and sisters. It blew my mind. And gave me a lot more compassion and for this for how difficult it is to recover from this disease when the pressures of when we step outside meetings come at us. And so the rigidity of the meetings inside the meetings started to seem some of the meetings weren't helpful. They were not helpful. And so for a couple of years, I started to I did this work internationally, my career anyway. I worked in Russia and Ukraine, Azerbaijan, Indonesia. So going to other countries and seeing how addiction was treated in different countries, I again, my mind was blown, at the privilege I had had of how I was treated as this princess almost. This like southern like little princess of with my genteel addiction and mental illness, and everybody just supported me. And then I would go to these other places and they were it was criminal. It just gave me a whole new perspective about what people have to deal with and how and what it like again what it takes for people to recover. And the support that it takes and the support that I was going to give people wherever they were, where meeting people wherever they were and to get support. My initial sponsor, oddly enough, in the 80s told me that, I think people early on, before there was a lot of support for AA and addiction, knew this. And so, I think about that a lot. When I hear that, and I wish there was a one size fits all for how recovery works. And I did work the steps, and I have worked the steps. When I first came in, I did have a God. My brain was sort of set for that. I talked about this. I grew up in a culture where I believed in God, and then I went to college, and then I got some education, and I saw some different things, and that fell away from me, and I don't anymore. And so it became difficult for me to sit in meetings where people would tell people, you'll come around to it, or you have to have a, you have to have that, or even hearing the term a spiritual awakening and trying to sidestep it and be like, well, you can call it whatever you want. And I was like, this is not working for me. The language around it requires a certain level of critical thinking to even get around the language. I was like, no. I was like, you don't have to believe a lot of this. Just come to the meetings and don't drink. You'll be like some of you will like it'll be okay. So, and that really made a lot of people angry when I would say stuff like that in the meetings. Like I was letting people get away with something. For me, in my recovery, which I do feel like I have some recovery, it's different. I had to go through also a lot of, had a lot of outside help, right? Like I've had a lot of, trauma therapy. I had a lot of, I've been on medication the entire, almost in 39 years that I've been sober now, except for 2 years of it. The help that I have received seriously from the people inside and outside of these programs because I ask for it. And again, like I cannot stress enough, it is a lot of it is because of where I live and how I look and how I'm articulate. People give it to me and I look trustworthy, which is so funny because I was such a thief. You would let Even in sobriety, I had a hard time giving up stealing. If you laid your purse down at a party on bed in the beds, like women lay their purses down, they go to parties and they lay their purses down. To this day, I want to rifle through purses and steal everything. It seems so easy because I was brought up by a thief and a con artist. I still see all the easy cons. And this program did teach me how to behave. I still have that thinking, but it did teach me how to behave like a person who isn't going to have to drink because of her behavior. And some therapy taught me that too. But I grew up around some criminal people and who got to blend in among other normal looking people. But man, the thinking is still there. And, but I see all the opportunities for it and and people don't see it coming. But when I came in, I would do things that weren't very honest and honorable. That took a long time for me to let that kind of behavior go. And I don't know why. I have no idea why. I would talk to my sponsors about it and nobody said to me, like, you cannot come to meetings anymore. Now, they didn't leave their purses around me. But they did say, please keep coming to meetings and please keep talking to me about it. And eventually the behavior stopped. Some people get sober and they never had any, or drank and they never had any of those issues. I had some dark stuff that didn't just drop away because I was working the steps. And still to this day, it's better. And I don't want to sound dark or whatever, because for the most part, like I have friends, I have a partner, I've been with my partner since I was 26, I don't have any kids. I never wanted kids. Thank goodness. I wouldn't have been a great parent. I didn't get good training for it. But I have a partner. We only got married because he had a stroke at 10 year and about 10 years ago. And that was for healthcare reasons. Nobody in my family knows we're married. Most of my friends don't know. And why do I keep that a secret? Because I didn't want to be a wife. People in my culture they wife you. You know what I mean? Like I still have issues with that. I still got issues, is what I'm saying, right? Like I'm still working on stuff. But I'm a good friend. I'm loyal. I'm honest about what I am not good at. I'm reliable. I'm a good worker. I feel like AA makes good workers, but I'm a good worker. I've gone back to school recently. This, at age 50, 53, I went back to school to get my master's degree. I know how to be humble and sit in a room full of 20-year-olds and keep my mouth shut and learn. I've had a life that I never thought I was going to have. Ever, I got out of South Carolina away from a lot of the things that were going to hold me down. Doesn't make me better than other people. I go home. My family still gives me so much shit. They're like, oh, you think you're better than us. And oh, you think you're educated and highfalutin. And I just give it right back to them. I'm like, shut up. We played together. I love you. You know that. Sit down, have your beer, give me some water. Let's, give me a hug, still love my family very much, but I can't live around them. The program and the fellowship of this program and the work that I had done has given me all of that. It has taught me how to love in spite of other people thinking that I'm not part of them and refusing to give up on that. I love that part. I don't put up with abuse, but they're not just going to kick me out just because I didn't end up like them. I love that, and I don't give up on people so easily. I don't stick around very close necessarily. There's a lot of things growing up in this program gave me. It made me a little rigid. I'm trying to work on that, but I feel like it's hard. It was hard to grow up and be sober and not end up rigid. At least it has been for me. The thing about secular recovery, and I said this last week too, but that I've been thinking about it since I said it, is that, and I was talking to somebody about this today, is that, and letting go of or learning to live life without a magical being and God, is that the goal of my life is to learn how to love more, always, right? Like I just, and it helps me stay sober, right? Like it's always about learning how to love more. And, especially the people that I don't like. And I know that's not everybody's cup of tea, and that's fine. And to do it without a magical being, do it as a human, because I know that it's possible. I know that it's in there. In spite of all that, I have such rage and anger, and it gets stimulated. But like this program challenges me to do that, and to do it without getting drunk, and to do it without resorting to behaviors that give my brain a charge in the way that I can't get charges. So it has. It gives me a way to grow in compassion, I guess I would say. And I know that's not everybody's shtick. It's just mine. And that, generally I can be a pretty dark person, but even in spite of that, I still think it matters to try to find out how to grow and love more. I'm also a great dog owner. I've had lots of dogs. We'll see what happens as I, get older. I have a horrible heart. I've also inherited from my dad and my dad's side of the family. I'm not doing so well physically. That's kind of a bummer. No matter what I do, that doesn't seem to be doing well. So that's a lesson in humility as well. And the concepts and things I have learned in this program also help me not get too wrapped up and down in that because, the point wasn't to get out of here alive. That wasn't really the point. I'm gonna stop with that. And, I don't know if there's like a topic in there that you want to pull from all that. I am very grateful to be have had the opportunity to live my life and to be here today to talk with y'all and to share. And I when I hear my story sometimes it sounds like a Mary Poppins version of getting sober and being sober, and that's okay. But or and I'll take it. I am in awe of the people that I have met and in this in these rooms and out of these rooms too, people who will never make it to these rooms for whatever reason and who live their lives drunk or on drugs. And I don't know how they do it, but like I just want to say this too. I was at a funeral and I spoke, and he died of an overdose, my friend did, and everybody kept saying, like, oh, what a waste. And, like, oh, it's tragic. And yeah, I just don't buy that. Like, I mean, I know people disagree with me, but like, that's just how some people die. But like, his life was not, he had moments of being not using and moments of using, but life is life. You know what I mean? And like, we are just some amazing people. And so, however we get to live it, I am just privileged to know the people that I have known. So, and I'm glad to be here with y'all today. Thanks.